Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 44 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we have an interview about an awful experience a dog owner and her dogs are going through.
Then that evening, two policemen and a dog handler turned up at the back door, telling him that under the Dangerous Dogs Act, they were going to search and seize the dogs.
We have puppy playtime.
Today I have a fun game and quiz for you to try out.
And we also have the Dogcast Radio News, and I'll be telling you about Train and Behave Week. But before all that, we have an interview about a fantastic new family film called Lithium Springs. The star of the film is a very cute dachshund called Fred. Carter Lord told me more.
It's a comedy adventure, and it stars Fred the dachshund, mm-hmm. who is in what some people have hailed as the greatest performance by a dachshund in the history of American cinema.
That's brilliant.
I'm not sure about British cinema, but as far as the Americans go, Fred's at the top of his game.
Oh.
Anyway, it's an adventure comedy. It takes place in Florida. It's about a guy who stumbles across the Fountain of Youth and a small treasure left in the swamp by Ponce de Leon. And it takes place in some remote and little seen areas of Florida, and underwater in the springs and caves, and out in the real Florida outback where there just are no people and there's been no development, and it's been like that for 1,000 years. It's beautiful.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's nice. That's our strength, is our understanding of Florida and our general love for dogs and animals and nature in general. It's an anti-littering film.
So
it's good for children. Good for children and parents, and it's clean. And we're committed to making clean films that families can watch with their kids, but not boring and pablum films. Something that's interesting for the parents too.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent, excellent. And how did Fred get the part?
Well, Fred, we actually went out looking for Fred. We had another dog. It's interesting. We had another dachshund who just had a weird accident. He just got run over by a car. He was extremely intelligent. This guy's name was Jake, and we had groomed him for this part. And he had a certain type of a very exuberant and intelligent personality, and he was inquisitive. And so then we were all kind of lined up to do this movie, and Jake got run over. It was a terrible time. And so we put it off for almost a year, and then after a while we got Fred, because we were kind of, after some time went by, we just said, all right, now we're going to do this. And we went and got Fred, and Fred had not been raised. He'd been raised in a kennel, so he hadn't been loved and touched much, and so we just kind of showered him with a lot of love and touching for about 6 or 8 months, and we got real close to him, but his personality was totally different. And we began shooting the film. I can remember at the very beginning, I'd come back and we'd be shooting these scenes in the car, and I had envisioned him looking out the window, and I'd talking to him, and he'd come around, and we kind of have an enthusiastic and an energetic relationship. But Fred was totally different. Fred would just kind of sit in the corner, and I'd be talking to him, and he'd kind of be looking out at me out of the corner of his eye. And I would come back, and I'd say, Fred, get it together, man. Get it together. You're not into this. What? You're not into this. I'd come back, and I'd bring the footage, And my partners, I would say, man, I don't know about Fred. He doesn't have any energy. And they'd look at the film and they start shrieking with laughter. They says, man, he's perfect. He says, this other character is like he's crazy, and he has a perfect reaction. So once we realized, and once we just kind of changed what we were doing to just let Fred be himself completely in all these things, then he just completely came alive. He took over the entire film. Everybody that sees the movie says that Fred is far and away he's the lead driving force in this film, and he just, we just had to give him some space and let him be who he was, and he really, he just lights it up.
So it was a case of sort of capturing natural behaviour rather than, you know, lots and lots of training kind of thing.
Right. Mm. That's true. And that happened with that. I made another movie, too, with the same situation, and I learned that on the first movie, that I think the key to working with animals, and dogs in particular, is, A, to establish a relationship with them so there's trust, so that they trust you, and then you really have a bond, and then you just work the movie around who they are. Mm. And if the script isn't quite right the way... Then you just have, you know, if it's not quite right based on this dog's personality, you just have to change the script.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and then you just have to let him be in a relaxed situation where he can be himself. And if you can capture an animal honest and being themselves, which it just takes time, and it takes really respect. I think is really ultimately what it takes. If you respect their area.
Mm.
Then you get these incredible things, you know.
Yeah.
You really do get incredible personality stuff, and it comes through, and they have real life if you're not just trying to jam them into a box. I found, you know, I tried to do that at the beginning, and I was unsuccessful. And then when I just relax and calm down and let them be themselves, then we just changed the script a little, and it was great.
You've said the word relax, and it must have been so much less stressful for him that he could just be himself, and he wasn't, you know, he didn't have all these expectations on him.
Well, that's true, and it's also true in the, see, we're independent filmmakers, and so on this film, on Lithium Springs, on this film that we made in Florida, we made it with only a 3-man crew. So there wasn't this huge carnival going on, which is usually what's happening on a movie set.
Mm.
Generally speaking, on a movie set, there's 40 or 50 people, and there's a huge thing going on behind the camera, and there's just all this like a circus.
Mm.
But and that the more people you have and the more activity it is, the harder it is for the animal to just be cool and be calm and relaxed.
Mm.
And in our film, we only had a 3-man crew. And that's one of the really great things about making films in this era, is that this new computer DV technology is such that you can, the lighting and the sound and all the technical aspects of making a film have been simplified so that you can really get a high-quality product with so much less technical needs.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes it good for going in the woods and capturing what's going on in the woods.
Mm.
And you can just slip in there and ease in there. And then if you've got your dog, it was like three people going in the woods with their dog.
Yeah.
So he was just looking at the butterflies and following the armadillos and looking for the gophers and looking in the creek. And he wasn't involved with 40 or 50 people, you know, around, and just so much stimulus.
Yeah, he's just having fun on a walk, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And if we're cool with the camera, and also the camera was really portable, so he got used to it. It wasn't like if you're having a Panavision camera, you have to have the dolly and the tracks, and you have to have an AC, assistant cameraman, and the DP, and the director, and you got six people, and then you have to hit your marks. See, Fred didn't have to hit his marks so much, whereas if you were Rin Tin Tin or Lassie or something, you have to have them trained to the point where they got to stand on point X and go to point Y and stop and turn around.
Mm.
You got to be extremely well trained to do that, and I'm not sure if you get it as well with animals. You know, you can do that with actors, and that's why Tom Cruise and those people get all that money, because they can do that and still be real. And hit those marks, you know, with a movie, with a big movie in Panavision, you got to be within the 3 or 4 inches of the marker. You're out of focus, and you got to be able to turn and have your relationship right in, or you're or in focus, or you can't do it. But with this new DV stuff, the new digital is infinitely more forgiving, and it makes for good animal filmmaking if you're in tune with your animal.
Mm-hmm. Lithium Springs has certainly been received well, hasn't it?
It has. We've been getting great reviews from all over the United States. We just keep getting more and more real. You know, we got a 3.5 stars from the best reviewer in Florida, and he only gave Spider-Man 3 stars.
Ooh.
He only gave that recent movie with the, he gave them 3 stars too. The one with the penguins. This racing one's out with the penguins.
Oh yes, yeah.
I know, and it's pretty good, and we're getting recognized by a lot of different groups, like the Library Journal and people that are organized for kid-oriented stuff, that kids that's clean, that's mm-hmm. not boring, but that's clean and good and interesting. We're getting a lot of good feedback from those people.
Yeah, yeah. You said that you worked on another film, The Enchanted, with a basset hound?
I did. There was a basset hound, and we had some owls, and we had a wolf. We had a real difficult situation with a wolf that had been transplanted from the northwest United States down into Florida, and it was really too hot for him.
Mm.
But we had him, and we were able to... We got a pretty good performance out of the wolf, too, but the basset hound was a similar... It was kind of a buddy film again, like Lithium Springs is, and the Bassett wasn't the star, but he was certainly a central character.
And
we shot it in the swamps of Florida with Panavision and with a 40-man crew, and
wow.
And so that was a different situation, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, we did pretty well with this little scamp with this basset hound.
I think the Daxies and the basset hounds, they're full of character, those breeds, aren't they?
They are. Well, they're hound dogs.
Yes,
you know,
they're
friendly and they love people, but they're stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And they're tough, too. They're tough and they're hunters. I was raised with hound dogs. My dad was a bear hunter, and we had... We had 16 hound dogs when I was a 5-year-old kid, and we had kind of moved down from Maine to Florida. He'd been a bear hunter in the northeastern United States, and so I was raised around hound dogs, and I understand them pretty well.
Yeah.
So maybe that helps some.
Yes. Yeah. Are you planning to work with animals again anytime soon?
Every time. I love them. You know what I love is one thing that's nice about the basset, about the dachshunds, is that everybody loves them, and they're funny, and they're really they have very intense personalities, and they're funny. If you have a great big kind of a masculine guy and a tiny little dachshund, there's you right off the bat, it's funny.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, excellent.
If it's kind of a country scene and you put him in a situation where it's a tough guy. You know, hound dogs are tough. And this woods and swamp we were in, it's tough out there. And you know, it's a rough place. The swamp is a rough place. It's not like going on the golf course.
No.
And there's all kinds of things in there, alligators and snakes and rough kind of swampy things to swim across, and marshy, wet, and you know, muddy, and he's right in there, and they like being in there. It's not like he's in there mincing around.
No,
he's in there. Boy, he says, "Hot diggity, here we go, back in the swamp. Let's go." You know.
you've made it sound really, really great, and I'm sure Fred had a wonderful time. If people want to find out more about Lithium Springs, where can they do that?
We have a website at www.lithium, L-I-T-H-I-U-M, just like the drug lithiumsprings.com. And there's a lot of information on there. There's a piece on there about what it was like to work with Fred. And then there was a description about how we made the movie and some visuals to get an idea. And the music is on there, too.
That's great. That's great. And can people buy Lithium Springs from there as well?
Yes.
Great.
It's for the low price of $19.95 plus $3 shipping and handling.
Okay.
Quantity discounts. And that's how we're doing it. You know, it's interesting. If you're interested in the film reality, we did not get a distributor, and I didn't think we would really due to the fact that we have no stars and we have and it was shot on mini DV. So it has a primitive aspect to it, but everybody likes it, including the distributors. They just thought that it was risky to put $500,000 into it, and they couldn't. They just thought it was going to be scary for them from a business point of view, and I'm not surprised. And so we're distributing it over the internet in kind of a new way, which is if we're successful, and I think we will be, because a number of my friends have been doing it this way. If we can just build an audience through things like this nice show that you have here, and people can find out about it, then the groundswell should begin, and it'll take us a few years, but then we can just kind of exist outside of the industry, you know, and still have a life and make another movie.
Yeah. Well, listen, when you make your next one, you will let us know, won't you?
I will let you know, and we need to get you in on it.
And maybe,
what kind of dog have you got?
We have two Labradors and a Bichon. I think the Bichon might be your cup of tea. She's very characterful.
Oh, that'll be good. But the Labs are good, too. You know, Labs are great.
Yes.
I love Labs. They're so friendly, and they love people so much.
Yeah. I tell you what, the Bichon would be more at home in the swamp. My lab, the black lab we have, he's a bit... He'll paddle, but he won't go in... He doesn't like swimming or anything like that. But the Bichon, she'll go anywhere and do anything. So she might be your, you know, up your street.
We'll have to get you in the water first to keep the gators back.
Okay. I'd be plenty for them to chew on.
That's right. We'll get you be out there out in front holding the gators back from the sound. That's true. Get the first bite on you.
Maybe. We'll see.
Wow. My first offer of a movie. If I don't mind a few gator bites. I guess I'll have to chew it over. Lithium Springs sounds great. I can't wait to watch it, and I do love Daxes. There's a link on the Dogcast site to the Lithium Springs site.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
I went to an exclusive kennel club. It was very exclusive. There was a sign out front, no dogs allowed. Phil Foster.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. Rocker and reality television star Ozzy Osbourne recently ruminated on whether he prefers his human companions or his canine ones. Ozzy revealed that he resents the fact that his children acquire dogs and then leave him to look after them. However, he finds dogs easier to understand and spend time with than most humans, so he doesn't mind too much.
Since Ozzy and his family share their home with no less than 11 dogs, that's just as well. Another celebrity who loves her dog is Vanessa Williams. Her Yorkshire Terrier, Enzo, went missing from her garden, and Vanessa was distraught. It remains unclear how and why Enzo got away, but the good news is that after 2 weeks, he turned up and was reunited with his famous owner. When Enzo was found running in the street, he was taken to a vet for a checkup. And, in a routine scan, his microchip identified him.
Enzo may not have made it as far as Fred, a basset hound, who was recently found 430 miles away from his home, but both dogs were saved by their microchips. More evidence that routine scans really work.
While Gibson the Great Dane remains unchallenged as the tallest dog in the world, there is a new challenger for the title of Smallest Dog. The official rules state that a dog must be at least 1 year old to be eligible for consideration, and after waiting patiently for that milestone, Dancer, a Chihuahua, measured only 5 inches, coming in at 0.4 inches below the current record holder. When Dancer was born, he was no bigger than his owner's thumb, and the advice was to have him euthanized. But with tender loving care, he grew up, just not very much. Confirmation of his record title should come in the next few weeks, and in the meantime, he is happy basking in the media interest his modest size is attracting.
At Dogcast Radio, we have a fondness for eccentric dogs and owners, and we've come across a pair who are certainly that. Sir Benjamin Slade has recently been in the news with his unusual search for an heir. Having no children of his own, Sir Benjamin has been considering a number of distant relations to whom he could give his 13th century manor house. Bornsall House in Somerset, UK, is for the moment home to Sir Benjamin and his dog Jasper. One source of their income is private wedding ceremonies the venue can host, and Jasper can be part of the celebrations. Sir Benjamin has taken to offering his dog's services as best man, pointing out his hound's faultless social skills and appealing nature. Jasper may not actually need the work, though, as he is a dog of means. The Labrador Rottweiler cross was rescued by one of Sir Benjamin's relatives, who bequeathed Jasper to him. Jasper had his own inheritance, though, a £50,000 trust fund. Under Sir Benjamin's careful management, that fund has now doubled. Jasper has a full name to match his wealth. It's Jasper Tudor, Earl of Richmond.
To find out more about this lucky dog, follow the link on the Dogcast site. And that's all from the Dogcast Radio News. Goodbye.
Did you ever notice when you blow in a dog's face, he gets mad at you? But when you take him in a car, he sticks his head out the window. Steve Bluestone. I was contacted about the problem we have coming up now, and I couldn't not do this interview. Every dog owner listening to this will be sad, angry, and outraged. Jill has 4 poodles, but at the moment she only has 2 living with her. The other 2 are in police custody. Jill and her family have no real idea what is actually going on, or when they will see their dogs again. Here's Jill to tell how her nightmare began.
It was Thursday, 31st of May.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was out most of the day, came back in the afternoon and let the dogs out to go and do their business in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And literally popped my head in the door, let the big girls disappeared off. Jenny and Minky disappeared out in the garden. They knew what they got to do, so I had to sort of chase the puppies out, say, come on, guys, you know. They're only, was it 4 or 5 months old now, so they're still learning.
Yeah.
And turned round, and they'd gone through the fence, hadn't they?
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, you immediately go, oh, my God, no, dump everything.
Yeah.
Threw the puppies back inside, said my son was revising upstairs, so I just explained I was going out to look for them.
Mm.
And headed out round the farm to look for them, because we live on a dairy farm.
Mm.
So I headed out, couldn't find, I went all around all the usual haunts, you know, that we go to on walks, the rabbit holes, yeah. You know, the little copses where they dig, and absolutely no sign at all.
Mm.
So my other half, when he got back from work, he joined the hunt. We, you know, were going backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. Then my son, he'd finished revising, he came out and was hunting as well.
Mm.
I mean, this went on. Until I think Justin came, I sort of pulled Justin out from the back door about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
I mean, by this time there was it started to pour with rain. There was a howling gale. We lived sort of at the top of a hill,
mm.
and it was torrential downpours and horrific weather. But you know, you're still out there trying to find them because I was just so worried. You know, to disappear off like this for this length of time, it's just ridiculous. You know, they've never. Anyway, so we had to give up at about 1 o'clock.
Mm.
My neighbour said, I've heard somebody still whistling, and I was wondering what was going on.
Oh.
You know? But yes, we couldn't find them. I have to say, I don't know whether you realise or not, I actually fly.
Mm.
And I was due out to report up at Heathrow at 7 o'clock the following morning. So I was sort of up and down all night. I could hear something barking. I know it was very windy and everything, and the gales were pouring rain, and so every time I heard somebody barking, I was down out the back door, you know, screaming your head off, thinking, where the hell are they? I just thought they'd been stolen, or they'd got hurt, or they got stuck, or, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I was just panicking. Anyway, 4:30 I was up. Quick scoot around the farm, couldn't find anything. My other half got up with me. I got dressed and headed off to Heathrow and had to go to work. So I just didn't know whether they were back. I said, for God's sake, just text me when they, you know, so that when I land, I just know what's happening. I got a couple of texts that Peter had found the girls.
Mm.
They'd both been separated.
Yeah.
One he'd found early in the morning, and the other one he found just before lunch, sort of late morning.
Mm.
Brought them back in. They were cold. They were soaking wet. So, you know, just threw them in the door, basically, you know.
Yeah.
Had to go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Then that evening, two policemen and a dog handler turned up at the back door, telling him that under the Dangerous Dogs Act, they were going to search and seize the dogs.
Hmm.
And, I mean, not being nasty, I mean, we've always been respectful of the police, you know.
Yeah.
And we you know, it wasn't actually me, it was Peter, because I wasn't here, but as he said, he didn't know any different.
No.
And they said, well, they were going to take the dogs. And he said, well, please, you know, let me bring them in so it's not so stressful for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, you know, put their harnesses on and took them up to Crawley Police Station.
Hmm.
What
was the grounds that they were going to take them on, you know?
Well, they said under the Dangerous Dogs Act.
And that's all they said?
That is what they were told. That's what Peter was told initially. They were being taken under the Dangerous Dogs Act.
Mm.
And I have to say that obviously we've done quite a bit of research since.
Mm.
But we didn't know what the Dangerous Dogs Act involved or anything.
No, you don't, do you?
Well, until these sort of things happen to you, you don't know.
No.
Anyway, Peter got to the police station, and obviously with the dogs, and they took the dogs away to an undisclosed location.
Hmm.
And Peter was then taken into an interrogation room, fingerprinted, DNA, etc., etc.
Hmm.
And then they told him they were changing the charge to the Livestock Act 1953.
Hmm.
This was sort of late Friday night, so he was given a duty solicitor and interrogated, and he told them exactly what I just told you about. We couldn't find them, trying to find them. We got our hands up and said, yeah, you know, we lost the dogs. We couldn't find them.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he was then bailed. Well, he still is on bail until the 10th of July.
Gosh.
But we still don't know what he's been charged with.
No.
To this date, we still don't know. Nobody seems to be able to tell us what he's actually been charged with.
Mm.
The following day, well, I don't know, he found out that there are some sheep in a field, across the other side of the farm, the far side of the farm, that apparently 6 had been killed and 17 maimed.
Good grief.
Mm. Yeah, I know, and I cannot be nice, I can empathise with the farm, it must be awful.
Yeah.
And then it came out in the paper that apparently the whole herd of 80 rare breed sheep had been attacked by... apparently, or allegedly, are two dogs.
Mm.
So, you know, you sort of think, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of my thoughts was, well, if they had done this, which, you know, horrific thing, surely we'd have noticed when Peter brought them back, they would have been covered, absolutely covered in gore and
blood, and they would have been dripping with it, wouldn't they?
Well, exactly. If they'd done 80 sheep, which it must have been in the space of about 4 hours, because that's the sort of time that we sort of were in bed, I think we might have noticed.
Yes, I should think so, yeah. I mean, that's not in the poodle nature, though, is it, to sort of attack like that?
Well, no, it's not. They're not that type of dog.
No, no.
You know, it's all just so peculiar. It really is. Mm. I mean, the following day, Peter took up their beds and some food into the police station because Minky, the younger one, is wheat intolerant.
Mm.
So she has to have wheat intolerant food, otherwise she has a bit of a problem.
Yes.
So... he took the food and beds in, and the animal welfare officer told him that he would contact him in a couple of days for us to arrange to go and see them.
Hmm.
Fine, you know, Peter said, that's fine, we'll go and see them and we'll try and sort out what's going on.
Hmm.
To date, we still haven't heard from the animal welfare officer.
Oh, so how long have you not seen the dogs for now?
2.5 weeks.
Oh, Jill.
We've had no contact at all for 2.5 weeks with our girls.
Mm, that's just
They've never been in kennels before.
No.
We don't take holidays because we've got animals.
Oh.
You know, they've never been away from home.
No.
It's all just a bit stressful, really.
Mm.
I mean, not being honest, Peter's gone. He's visited Crawley. That week he visited Crawley Police Station 3 times and left messages for people saying, please, will you just get in contact with us? We just want to know they're all right.
Mm.
Can we come and see them? I mean, being poodles, they need to be groomed.
Yeah.
You know, they're not like, you know, they're just slightly different dogs, aren't they, really? They take a bit more looking after.
Well, presumably, anybody that has them within their care and doesn't groom them will be in violation of the dog control orders, won't they?
Well, I just don't know. We just don't know. He left messages all that week. Nobody, when he turned up, there was nobody in the police station available to comment or to talk to him. He just got no answer at all. It was like, you know, banging your head against a brick wall. See, we haven't been told of any evidence that they have. We've talked to our neighbours, and one of the neighbours was out in her garden because she heard something barking. And she was out there in the pouring rain, poor thing, in her gym jams, you know, with a torch, because it was pouring with rain, howling gale, with a torch, and she has got a 12-foot rhododendron hedge at the bottom of her garden, which backs onto the field with the sheep. And she saw a brown dog running in the field.
What colour are your poodles? Sorry, what colour?
Well, one's brown, one's black.
Yeah.
But not being nasty, the brown one is very small standard, I'm afraid. She's a bit, bit dinky.
Yeah.
So that's what she saw. Somebody else said they saw a dog in the field, but it looked like a red setter to her. And when she was questioned by the police, the farmer apparently said, well, could it be a poodle? And she said, well, she didn't know. She thought it looked like a red setter.
There's a bit of difference.
Well, there is, and she said, I can't say. It was just a brown dog.
So basically, you find yourself now in the position, your dogs have been taken, you've not been presented with any evidence, your partner's on bail.
Yep.
And you haven't been allowed to see the dogs, and people aren't getting back to you, are they?
Well, hang on a minute, we're getting better, okay? We tried the animal welfare officer in, apparently he's based out of a town near us called Burgess Hill. Peter turned up there on Sunday when he'd finished teaching, and it's closed all day Sunday. Monday he visited and left an email and a message, and he got no reply. I mean, in between my trips, I was on the internet, and I have to say that, a phenomenal number of people have contacted me. People that I don't even know have contacted me and just said, you know, we're with you, we're supporting you. This sounds totally farcical. Which I have to say has been lovely. It's been really nice to know that there are other people out there, you know.
I think every dog owner must feel for you.
Well, it's just a nightmare. You keep thinking, when to wake up, this isn't real. It's just not real. It's not right.
No.
Anyway, we got past various people's names, and dear old Beverly Cuddy contacted us, and she was a real support. Those first few days when I was back, I was just, you know, tearing my hair out, not quite sure what to do, but she kept emailing me back, and she was great. I got Trevor Cooper's name from her, and I must admit, a lot of people then came back to me with Trevor Cooper, who is apparently a really good, fantastic guy, and we phoned him. He actually doesn't deal with dog law all the time now, and he works for somebody else, and he gave us some advice saying basically they can't hold them, and to get in contact and say they really can't hold them, but he couldn't take our case on because he's too busy.
Oh dear.
Which is really sad. I mean, we've had so many people on to us. I've been trying to find a solicitor that will actually deal with this. It has been another nightmare. Well, I've phoned all the charities. None of the charities would actually take it or help us because it invalidates their charitable status, apparently.
Oh, right.
Though I have to say, Anne from Justice for Dogs put me on to another solicitor who we contacted, and he said he would go and see what he could find out and get back to us, and he never did. So we phoned him again, and he still hasn't got back to us to date. Somebody else, I contacted the Law Society in the end and said, well, who can I get in contact with locally who can help? And we did find another solicitor, and he actually went to the police station and found out that the dogs are allegedly at Crawley Police Station still, and they are okay. And the police were waiting to see, this is 10 days, okay, after they'd allegedly done this, waiting for them to pass a sheep tag, a sheep ear tag.
That would have, a dog's digestive system is so fast. That was, you know, that would have come in, I would imagine, within 24 hours. This is ridiculous.
And not being nasty, as I said to Peter, I said, with Minky and her wheat intolerance problem, if they hadn't been feeding her the correct food, it would have been out a lot sooner than that.
Yes.
So that was it. We're now waiting for another solicitor who is acting on behalf of a friend at the moment, who's an absolute Rottweiler, but he's been in court for the last few days, so we can't get hold of him. Meanwhile, I'd contacted everybody I could think of, the parish councillor.
Yeah.
He got back to me, and I contacted our local MP, Francis Maud's secretary, up at the House of Commons, and I said, I just want to know the dogs are okay.
Yeah.
Can we see them? What's going on? And it just seems sad that it's actually taken that to, you know, sort of evoke a response. We got a message on the answer phone saying that they'd received this letter and the dogs were fine, and et cetera, et cetera, and he'd contact us early again this week. We did have a call this morning. Oh, yes, and he wanted to get back to us to discuss our letter from the MP. That obviously didn't go down too well.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I know. And you just think, well, why have I got to go, you know, that high to actually get somebody just to talk to me?
Yeah. I don't understand why you can't visit them.
Well, oh, yeah, it gets better, OK? It gets better. I keep telling you, it gets better. we got a message left on the phone this morning. Telling us that the dogs are now being held under Section 19 of the Police Criminal Evidence Act as evidence of an offence.
So they're basically frightened that you will pass them to somebody else and they won't be able to get to them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, not being nasty, what evidence can they have left on them anyway?
You see, I've checked that out, and it's sort of basically they can seize things if they are worried that you will lose or damage or, you know, willfully withhold, you know, get rid of, pass on. So that's... I don't understand it any more than you do, Jill.
So we tried to get back to this guy again, and somebody did get back to us, and Peter actually spoke to a policeman.
Wow.
I know, hello.
Red flag day.
2.5 weeks later, we've actually spoken to somebody.
Yeah.
And apparently they can hold the dog, can hold the dogs. And... We don't know whether they're getting their walks. I mean, they used to have at least an hour a day in the woods, sort of, you know. It's the grooming. They need clipping.
And they need babies. They need to be at home and be loved.
Well, yeah. We just love them back.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had to mend the fence again because the cows broke in again the other night. So we now have a 7-foot fence. With a sort of line of electric fencing going around the middle to keep the cows out and the dogs in.
Yeah. So you've made every effort you can, haven't you?
Well, yes. It just defies belief. I just don't know where to go or what to do.
No.
Well, Jill, why is it they don't want to talk to us?
I know. Jill, all we can do is put the story out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean... There is strength in dog owners banding together. And if anybody listening to this has some bright ideas about, you know, how to help, you know, please do get in touch with Dogcast and we can pass the messages on to Jill. And,
well, that would be brilliant.
Yeah. But basically, you just want to at least see your dog, but ideally have them back, don't you?
Well, ideally, yes.
Yeah.
But it would just be nice just to go and see them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're just with us all the time, really, and you know, they're just our babies, and we just want to see them. You know, psychologists say you should never have dogs as surrogate children, but they are, I'm afraid. Mm, you know. Mm.
They just are. They're one of the family, and you look upon them as a child, don't you?
Oh yeah, they're our babies. They sleep in the bedroom with us.
Yeah.
That's an awful thing to say, I know, I'll admit it. I mean, when I get back from a trip, they come and sleep on the bed with me.
Yeah.
You know, they tuck up on me all of a doze. It's you know, they're my babies. They're just, it's just not the same here, guys, without them.
No.
One thing, Gina, I do want to say is the fact that please just warn other people.
Yeah, yeah.
That this can happen. This, you know, you haven't got a leg to stand on.
Mm.
You haven't got any rights. You haven't got anything.
No.
They're not inanimate objects. They're my dogs. They're my, you know, my poodles. Mm.
Jill and her family's lives have obviously been turned upside down by this experience. And if you can think of a way to help, please get in touch with us and we'll pass it on. Look at your dog and imagine him or her taken away, kept away, in an unknown place under possible threat of death. What would you do and who would you turn to? That's the position Jill and her dogs find themselves in. We will update you with any news we have, and let's hope it's good news. I like driving around with my two dogs, especially on the freeways. I make them wear little hats so I can use the carpool lanes. Monica Piper.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime. Hi, and welcome to Puppy Playtime. Today, I have a fun game and quiz for you to try out. Do you know where some of the most well-known dog breeds started out? Well, I found a great game where you are shown a picture and a short description of a dog, and you have to find out the location he originally came from. There are some gorgeous dogs to recognise and learn about, and the interactive map gives you more information too. Some of the answers are quite surprising, but you don't have to get it right first time. If you want to play, follow the link on the Dogcast Radio site. The quiz I have found tells you what sort of breed you are at work, but you can just substitute school for work. By analysing your answers to several questions, the programme reveals which dog breed you are most like. I tried the quiz and I was told I am most like a Great Dane, while Julie came out as a Jack Russell Terrier. To find out what breed you resemble in your attitude, click on the link on the Dogcast Radio site. Till next time, have fun with your dogs and make sure your dog has fun with you.
The dog was created specially for children. He is the god of frolic. Henry Ward Beecher. If you're in the UK, there's an exciting new event for you. Train and Behave Week. This is launched by the Company of Animals, is solely dedicated to training dogs and will be starting on July the 28th with a grand finale on Saturday the 4th of August. The aim of the week is to raise public awareness of the advantages of having well-trained dogs which easily fit into society. Now there are lots of high-profile trainers who are backing this event, such as Dr. Roger Mugford, Victoria Stillwell, Colin Tennant, Gwen Bailey, Fiona Whelan, Charlie Claricoats and Carolyn Monteith. Basically, there are various tasks your dog will be required to carry out, and you need to train him or her to be able to do these. You can get help by finding a local trainer who will assist your efforts, and the tasks vary from basic obedience to more advanced feats. It doesn't matter how old you or your dog are, there's a category you can enter. And for more serious competitors, there are novice, intermediate and advanced classes. This is a great opportunity to have fun with your dog. And to find out more, go to dogtrainandbehaveweek.com. If you haven't done so already, you can help us make Dogcast Radio the show you want to listen to by taking a few minutes to fill out the survey that you will find at the bottom of every episode page. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315
84922022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121280922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What do you get if you cross a dog and a hen? Poached eggs.